I call this meeting of the Committee on House on Housing, Finance, and Policy to order. We do have quorum today. We have just a couple bills on the agenda, but before we get into them, I'll look for approval of last meeting's minutes. Can I have a motion for the minutes? Representative Scraba moves the minutes. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. All right, so we'll move to our first bill on the agenda today, House File 688. Representative Frazier, welcome to committee. Please tell us a little bit about your bill.
Hello, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Pleasure to be here today. I think this is actually the first time I've been in front of the Housing Committee in my time here at the legislature, so excited about that. So I'm here to talk about House File, is it 688 or 668? 688. And I do, can I just say we would like to send this to the General Register? I don't know if we had the path figured out, but General Register is where we like to send it.
So it sounds like we were wanting to have a stop in human services as well, is the information that I was getting from research on this one.
Okay. I will be okay with it. I'll check in with the chair and see if we need, but that's okay. We'll work that out. That's fine if you send it there. We'll work it out. Okay. All right. So assistance dog organizations play a critical role in supporting individuals with disabilities by raising and training highly skilled service dogs. These dogs provide life-changing support, enhancing independence, and improving quality of life for their handlers. In Minnesota, three assistance dog organizations are currently certified by Assistance Dogs International, the leading global authority in the assistance dog industry. These organizations rely on the dedication of more than 1,000 volunteers statewide who raise and socialize assistance dogs in training from just a few months old until they are fully trained, typically around 3 years of age. You're going to meet one of those dogs today. However, some individuals who wish to volunteer as puppy raisers face barriers due to homeowners association regulations. Certain HOAs prohibit dogs altogether or impose restrictions based on breed or weight, preventing volunteers from housing an assistance dog in training. While current law prohibits HOAs from restricting fully trained assistance dogs, this bill seeks to extend that protection to individuals raising and training assistance dogs. To ensure the integrity of this provision, the bill includes language to prevent homeowners from falsely claiming that a pet dog is an assistance dog in training. Furthermore, we have collaborated with the Community Associations Institute, which represents HOAs in Minnesota, and they have expressed no concerns under this legislation. You have someone here representing if there are questions from the members. And without further ado, I do have a testifier here today, along with one of our great dogs, Jeff Johnson, Executive Director of Can Do Canines, which resides in my district. The largest assistant dog organization in Minnesota has been a key advocate for this initiative. This bill represents a crucial step in expanding support for assistance dog training efforts while balancing the interests of homeowner associations. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier and our wonderful canine, Jeff Johnson.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Johnson. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Johnson. I'm the executive director at Can Do Canines, which is based in New Hope, Minnesota. And I live in Plymouth, Minnesota. And this is Tucker. Tucker is 3 years old. He is in final training right now to be an assistance dog. He has a client, but he hasn't met his client yet. She's in a power wheelchair, and he will change her life in the matter of the next few months and hopefully be with her for the next 9, 10, 11 years. Can Do Canines has been around since 1989, and we're one of the largest assistance dog organizations in the country. We serve people with mobility challenges, with seizure disorders, deafness or severe hearing loss, type 1 diabetes, and childhood autism. We also place dogs in facilities like hospitals and community service providers. We rely on private donations, not government money, and we estimate that it costs about $45,000 to raise and train each of our dogs. But we give them away free of charge because few of our clients could even come close to affording that. We have 51 employees, but we rely very heavily on volunteers to help us raise, train, and socialize each of these dogs over about a 2.5 to 3 year period. Some of those volunteers are inmates in 9 different Minnesota and Wisconsin prisons who raise dogs for us, but even more individuals and families throughout the state who love and raise these dogs and then give them back to us so that they can change someone's lives. Our volunteers are amazing, and they allow us to do what we do. Our volunteers host dogs anywhere from a few days to over 2 years at a time. And over the years, we've had potential volunteers who wanted to raise dogs for us, but despite owning their home, their HOA prohibited them from doing that based on general rules or maybe specific rules about pet dogs. Today, we're asking that the law prohibiting HOAs from restricting active service dogs in people's homes be extended to service dogs in training. It will allow us and organizations like us in Minnesota to recruit more volunteers and ultimately to change more lives. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Is there any questions or comments from committee? I think we have one to start, Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for being here today. I appreciate the passion that you have for your industry and what you do. It definitely provides a unique service. Question I have, though, is with that all said, what mechanisms do we have in place to make sure that there aren't going to be any undue expenses placed upon the housing provider if there's damage caused by the animal, et cetera?
I can answer that.
Go ahead. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So current law, and that would extend to this, says that the owner of either a service dog or now a service dog in training is responsible for any damage that the dog does. Also, the dog has to meet a certain standard of behavior or this will not apply.
Representative Daza.
Just follow up would be, I understand that, is there any additional rental deposit that the landlord can request? My understanding is they cannot, is that correct?
Correct.
I have a little hesitation with that because I always feel that you never know what kind of potential damage could be caused. Even with the best trained animals, something can happen. But thank you.
All right. Next on the list will be Representative Hussein.
What a great bill that you bring forward. And you know the rules. You first time coming to housing. Where's the treatment? Representative Frazier. I've been sitting for housing for 2 years, and this is my second term. This is the first time you ever came. Are you coming with an empty hand?
I'll make it up.
Representative Hussein, you actually got to my point. I was giving my closing comments here. next on the list will be Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier, for this. You know, I know you took a lot of time making sure that you found that kind of middle balance in this bill, and you know, took a lot of time and effort to ensure it's something that can be implemented. And I just want to, you know, thank you for this. I think this is really important, and it's, you know, great to meet Mr. Johnson here. But I just want to thank you both for this.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Is there any further comments or questions from members of the committee? Representative Rehrauer.
I do. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this forward. Thank you, Representative Johnson, also. It was great to meet you. This is a question. I just like to hear, you know, the impact behind the bills that come forward to us. So if you could just share with me some of the positive impacts you've seen that these assistance dogs are able to provide the people.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. I mean, that's other than being with dogs, it's the best part of my job is to hear from our clients how these dogs, they don't help them. They literally transform their lives. So, for example, Tucker, his client is a woman who's in a power chair and is pretty severely disabled. And he will do things for her like open doors, open drawers, get things for her that she wouldn't otherwise be able to do. He's been taught to do laundry for her. He will pick up around the house. And he's obviously there to get help if something happens. If you know, she's in some sort of emergency situation, he knows where to go to either get the phone or press a button that calls several people who could come and help. The best stories, though, are from our parents of children with autism. And if many of you know, for a family with a child with pretty severe autism, your life is very difficult. It's not easy. You don't get to do the things that normal families get to do, like go out and have dinner together or go to the fair or whatever it is. And I had a mom come up to me after they'd had this dog for maybe 6 months, and she said, "This dog rescued a little boy who was trapped inside my son that we didn't know existed and saved our family."
Hello.
Because we can now do things that normal families get to do. So it's they're amazing, and We learn every single year a new thing that a dog can figure out if they're trained the right way.
Representative Rivera.
Thank you so much. That is very meaningful. Appreciate it.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Frazier, to your bill.
This is a good bill. Like Mr. Johnson said, it's going to open up a pool of volunteers that have been shut out for a long time. So looking forward to getting it in place.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for being here today. With that, I make the motion that House File 688 be moved to the Committee on Human Services. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill's on its way.
Thank you. All right, our next, everyone's here is pretty excited about having a puppy in the room, so I'm getting around in a second here. Our next bill on the agenda today is House File 1143, Lead Howard. I'll make the motion that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion in further omnibus bill and further action. So with that, Lead Howard, to your bill.
Chair Igo, members of the committee, I regret to inform you I do not have a dog to accompany me with this bill presentation. So it's an uphill climb here to start, but we'll see what we can do. In all serious members, this is a really important bill to jumpstart our housing production in greater Minnesota. And you might ask, why is a legislator from a suburban district leaning into a bill like this? And it's not just because I grew up in Representative Mecklen's district in Becker, but it's because that we face a housing shortage from border to border, from Minneapolis to McGregor Township. That's in Chair Igo's district, the McGregor. See what I did there? We need to recognize that while our entire state is challenged with a housing shortage, there are unique challenges to greater Minnesota. In particular, what I hear from time and again is the desire to see more housing development, especially workforce housing coming to greater Minnesota. But what those communities have seen is really a market failure. An inability for developments to pencil out. And some examples of that, you know, in much of greater Minnesota, a single-family home that is built for $275,000 will get appraised for $200,000. A multifamily project might need rents of $1,400 per unit to pencil out, but the local market can only support $900. So we have this market failure. And when we have a market failure like that in greater Minnesota, or when we have a market failure to build affordable housing across the state, we have a role to use public investment to make sure that something as fundamental and foundational as housing is accessible for everyone in our state. And so that's what this bill seeks to do with the Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Program. Now, in the 23-24 budget, we provided a historic investment in housing specifically for greater Minnesota. That includes, for the first time ever, statewide affordable
recording
housing
in progress.
Aid that goes directly to greater Minnesota communities. It includes over $40 million for greater Minnesota Workforce Program, and it includes an $8 million investment in this program, the Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Program, an innovative new program that allows public investment to help fund the public infrastructure needed for a new housing development, which can often be one of the most costly pieces of a housing development. And as a developer is trying to stack funds and try to find a way to make it all sort out, this piece becomes a huge challenge. And so what this fund seeks to do is defray those costs and allow communities to, with public resources, have this key piece that allows a development to move forward that otherwise would not have. Members, we're in an all-hands-on-deck moment when it comes to addressing our housing shortage all across the state. And to make homes more affordable and accessible for all, we need more public investment and policy change. We need to be yes and mode. And so in that spirit, I encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you, Lead Howard. With that, we'll go into testimony unless there's any questions to start. All right, so then first on our list will be David Murphy, who I believe is remote. Go ahead and introduce yourself for committee and unmute yourself. I always got to remember that part. Mr. Murphy, are you there? And we can come back to him then. I guess we'll go to the next person on the testifier, Mayor Hajduk. It is. We'll try this again. Mayor Hajduk or Mr. Murphy?
Is it from me?
Yep.
Hello.
Mayor Hajduk, can you hear us? We are having technical difficulties, members.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. It's not you.
There you go. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Mayor Hajduk. Can you hear us? Yeah. One brief moment, members.
You can hear me?
Yes. I can hear you, Pete. I don't know who else can.
Oh. Okay. Barely. Okay, I'll go then, if that's all right. Okay. Anyways, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Igo, and members of the House Finance and Policy Committee for allowing me to testify about the housing needs in my community today. I'm Pete Hajduk, Mayor of Hibbing, Minnesota, and a constituent of Chair Igo. Hello?
Here, members, I think what we're going to do here, and if that's we're going to take a brief recess and figure this out.
Hello?
For communications, because we're going to make sure this is recorded properly for the committee. So with that, we are at a brief recess while we figure this out.
All right. I know.
Oh, you can't. I'm on the list.
Yes.
Yeah. We're just going to say good things. I will say.
Okay. All right. So they're recessing on this side.
Okay. Well, I thought they were hearing me.
Yes.
Well done.
No, you just.
Yeah, they recorded it.
Oh. Yeah. Because
I was trying to grab you beforehand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Does this
one
need to be unmuted?
Yep.
There we go.
And then put on our video as well. So then
can our virtual testifiers hear us now?
We can.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you.
Did you want me to go then at this time?
Yeah. 1 second. I'll gavel us back in here. All right. Now that we're all back, we'll go back to the order here. We fixed our technical difficulties. So the first member we have testifying then will be Mr. David Murphy.
Very good.
Please proceed with your testimony and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Dave Murphy, and thank you, Chair Igo, for the opportunity to testify on the critical issue of housing in Minnesota. My name is David Murphy, and I'm the City Administrator for the City of St. Joseph, and I would like to share our experience with housing shortages. Lack of housing is preventing people from moving to and living in our community. This issue, while felt in St. Joseph, is also affecting communities across the state and could lead to stagnation, further impacting small towns like ours. For instance, the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University are located within and near our city, but the lack of housing has led to difficulties attracting staff and retaining graduates in our community. The St. Joseph City Council has undertaken a strategic goal-setting process where we identified housing as one of our top three priorities. We prioritized expanding housing options within the community to ensure there is a variety of housing types available, including single family. However, we are now facing considerable infrastructure challenges that local developers in the private industry simply cannot address alone. Areas that would be primed for single family housing require lift stations, some with up to 7-figure price tags. These infrastructure needs have halted potential housing projects. We've now reached a point where few viable housing projects are left, and we're concerned that within the next few years, infrastructure issues will prevent any new housing projects from moving forward unless we can access programs like the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program to help reduce those costs. Although we are exploring infill projects alone will not be sufficient to meet the demand, quantity, or variety of housing units needed across the entire housing spectrum here in the city of St. Joseph. St. Joseph is also home to a rapidly expanding industrial park, which has brought hundreds of jobs to the area within the last few years. This industrial park growth would not have been possible without a grant from the Business Development Infrastructure Program, BDTI program. The industrial park has been so successful that the market is demanding a phase two of the industrial park with an expansion. However, we need more housing units for the current, prospective, and future employees. Programs like the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program can have the same transformative effects on housing in our community as the BDTI grant did for job creation and help communities across the state. So I want to say thank you, Chair Igo, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of St. Joseph, as well as the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities on this critical topic that is impacting every community in the state. I also want to thank you, Chair Igo, Representative Howard, and the other authors of the bill before you today, putting more money into the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Program and other important housing programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. And why don't you just hang on there in case we have any questions after we get through testimony. So next on our list then will be Mayor Pete Hajduk. Please unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Igo, and members of House Finance and Policy Committee for allowing me to testify about the housing needs in my community today. I'm Mayor Pete Hajduk, Minnesota, and constituent of Chair Igo. Thank you also to DFL Lead Howard for carrying HF 1143, a bill that would provide additional funding for the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. Like many other cities throughout Minnesota, the city of Hibbing has a significant need for additional housing units. Our recent housing study completed in 2023 shows a need for an estimated 1,200 units of additional housing over the next 10 years across all types of housing, including single family, market rate, affordable rental, and senior housing. In our city right now, we have several major housing projects in various stages of development. First, the Housing Redevelopment Authority of Hibbing recently secured $26.5 million in funding from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for the Cobb Cook Place project, which will replace 52 units of workforce housing. The site for this project will require a new road and access for utilities. We will be applying to this program for funding to assist with costs to build this road and extend these utilities. Second, we have two single-family housing developments to create an additional 90 units of housing in the planning stages that will require roads, water, sewer, utility infrastructure to be extended in our urban core. And finally, we have a downtown infill redevelopment project that has a multifamily housing component with a minimum of 48 new units. Every single one of these projects has a significant funding gap, and as a rural community, we need assistance to close this gap. Adding infrastructure is expensive and makes adding housing a real challenge. Programs like Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure are important tools for helping to get more housing built and to make it more affordable. We appreciate the legislation creating this program and ask that you provide more money because it is much needed across the state. I urge you to prioritize this equity-focused rural initiative as an opportunity to drive long-term sustainability and fairness for all Minnesotans. Increasing these precious funds in an equitable way for rural communities such as Hibbing to allow us to make construction of new housing units very affordable for our taxpayers. Hibbing has great needs for new housing units, and we need your help. On behalf of Hibbing and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, thank you, Representative Howard, and the committee for helping to support this program and other important housing programs. They won't solve everything, we know that, but they will make a difference as we tackle these housing issues throughout the state. I thank you again for your time, and will answer any questions, and I do have my economic developer, Betsy Olivanti, at my side to assist. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next on our list then will be Dante Tomasoni. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Are you okay?
We can hear you now.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Dante Tomasoni. I'm the Director of Corporate Affairs for Cirrus Aircraft. I'm here today to testify in support of the bill. I kind of approach this testimony and this specific bill, I guess, from a unique standpoint in the sense that as the Director of Corporate Affairs for Cirrus, I'm a part of a company that employs 1,700 people in northeastern Minnesota. We are continually struggling to find housing for our employees. That is one side of the coin. In fact, a statistic that is interesting is here at Cirrus over the last 3 years, we have extended offers to individuals that have either A, accepted the offer and then later turned it down, or B, not immediately turned down the offer, but after some time to consider, turned down the offer because they simply couldn't find housing in the area. I feel like those 35 individuals is a pretty stark statistic that we could not attract into what I consider the most beautiful place, in northern Minnesota that you could want to work. The other side of this is that prior to my time at Cirrus, I was a multifamily developer. So I lived, breathed, and died housing. Well, maybe not died, but that's a little dramatic. Housing was pretty much everything that I did as part of my job. And I examined markets, economies, cost of build, feasibility of projects, and looked at it from all sides. And we've experienced something truly unique in history that was sparked by the COVID drop in supply. We've seen the cost of supplies, the cost of materials spike in an unprecedented way. And recovering out of the COVID inflation, we now have higher interest rates, which historically aren't terrible. But when you combine that with the cost to construct, we also have, because of the lack of housing, we have a lack of labor in northern Minnesota. So it's also more expensive to build. And when you look at what a developer examines, and you're putting on my developer hat, these housing projects are all math. They have to do the math to borrow from a bank, just like you and I would to build a new house or to buy a house. And they have to provide certain loan requirements. They have to meet debt to equity requirements, loan to value requirements. And these are all ways of saying, if the project doesn't have a certain amount of profitability built into it, or an ability to actually, essentially not lose money, the bank won't lend to a developer. And if a bank won't lend to a developer, a project simply won't get done. You add on top of that now rents and the cost of homes have been pushed to such a high level that our jobs can't keep up with it. And we're at the top of what the market can manage for the cost of rent or housing. And I call it, the three rocks in a hard place, essentially. That we're behind, and that's interest rates, that's cost to build, and then that's the price that the market can handle. And so we are in a very, very difficult time, and you've probably all heard this, that there's a gap that needs to be cleared for developers to want to build, especially in greater Minnesota, because there simply isn't the population of builders that can just come and do a project. In fact, I've talked to several developers that have tried to recruit labor from the cities and bring them up. And the truth is their answer is we'd love to, but we're busy 24/7 if we want to be down here. So Why would we drive 2 to 3 hours to do a project? It's a very difficult spot to be economically. You can't have job growth because there's nowhere for people to live. And there's nothing for the business to be able to expand them into that region. And so we've had the same issue. In fact, at Cirrus, we're considering a 240,000 square foot expansion. And the number one question that we've had to ask ourselves is, are we going to build a ghost town? Because there's nowhere to put people. So, that is the testimony I have for you today. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for listening. I'll yield for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thomasoni. Please just hang on. We'll get through testimony and see if there's any questions. Next on the list, then, will be Kristen Incidi. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo, members of the committee. My name is Kristen Incidi. I'm the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1143. This program would provide needed investments in infrastructure across the state of Minnesota. And our lens is we support 23 Habitat affiliates in the state of Minnesota and Greater Minn, and what we hear from them about what it takes to build affordable homeownership is that infrastructure continues to be a barrier for their production. We have some affiliates who will put in the infrastructure and then have to pass that cost down to Habitat homebuyers in the sale of their Habitat homeownership program, and we're in the business of trying to create affordable homeownership. So we see this opportunity as a really beautiful demonstration of public and private partnership, and a way to invest in affordable housing and homeownership that doesn't only serve the family who's buying the Habitat home, but invests in the long-term public good. We currently have a project that is working on an application for the program in Red Wing. The Goodhue County Habitat is collaborating with the City of Red Wing on their development Hope Heights, which would be building 26 homes. And this program would allow for them to apply for about 50% of their infrastructure costs. And the Habitat affiliate is working to bring the match to that table. So it's this really nice partnership between the state, the city, and the nonprofit Habitat to build 26 affordable ownership opportunities on a piece of land in Red Wing that currently is undeveloped. It's a parking lot. And so it's adding sort of an economic development engine as well into the community. So you've heard from several testifiers already, so I'm not going to repeat what they've already said. You've heard that the need is statewide. We see this in all of our Habitat affiliates, and many of you live in those communities where the Habitats are working as well, so you likely know. And we just really think that this type of investment would help focus resources needed to help develop affordable housing in Greater Minnesota. So thank you so much, Chair Igo, members of the committee, and Lead Howard for authoring the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Incidi. Next on the list then will be Mary Thompson, who I think is virtual as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mary Thompson. I serve as the Executive Director for Heartland Lakes Development Commission in Hubbard County. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties to express support for House File 1143 that will provide additional funding to support Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. Based on our 2024 housing study, Hubbard County had an estimated vacancy rate of 1.5%. Our supply of available for sale housing in the county is 3.2 months. Average should be 6. And our current house prices, roughly 50% of homeowners can afford to purchase a moderately priced entry-level home, which is about $200,000 for entry-level. The proportion drops to 29% that can afford a move-up house priced at $350,000. Park Rapids and Hubbard County are missing out on potential population and employment growth due to lack of housing. Anecdotally, one of the greatest housing needs in the county is for modestly priced housing targeting moderate income households. It can be difficult to find residential parcels to purchase for a new home, especially in the cities located within the county. Additional residential subdivisions are needed. However, locating vacant land and then funding the infrastructure improvements can make a project unachievable. Typically, the cost of infrastructure is an additional cost layered onto the sale price of the lot and home or as an assessment to the property. In communities such as Hubbard County, that is the difference between a house being affordable or not. For example, Heartland Lakes Development Commission is currently working on approximately 35-acre residential subdivision. Based on our early design specs, there will be a need for 6,400 lineal feet of infrastructure, including roadway, water, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, which amounts to capital construction costs of $3,859,460 to create 85 building lots. Breaking this cost down on a per lot cost basis amounts to $45,405 per lot, which does not include the cost of the land or any soft costs associated with the development. With lot costs approaching $50,000, there's little chance of meeting the needs of moderate income households that are in most need of houses priced at about $200,000 without some type of assistance to bring the development costs down. Both tax increment financing and tax abatement are viable options, but it just isn't enough. The Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program is a much needed tool to help us bridge that gap across the state. Home ownership provides many significant benefits to a community, such as boosting educational performance of children, higher participation in civic and volunteering activities, improving healthcare outcomes, lowering crime rates, and increasing tax capacity. Providing local governments in Greater Minnesota with the opportunity to access funding to help offset the cost of infrastructure development is an important step in helping those communities achieve the goal of providing opportunities for home ownership, which ultimately expands the economic vitality of a community. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1143 today.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. And we'll just hang on here. We got one more testifier, and then we'll go to questions. So next on the list and final person on the list will be Cap O'Rourke. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association for Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities who have populations under 5,000. As I have testified in this committee before, the housing needs for our small cities across the state are great. Typically with programs, state programs, if you want to have it affect small cities, you have to design it in a way that the application is simple and it's targeted. Many programs, whether it be housing, transportation, environmental, open it up to all cities and they say, these are great programs for cities. Often this is the case, is the application barrier or the requirements typically will either purposely or inadvertently exclude small cities. That's why we were really excited 2 years ago when we had two targeted programs that were going to help with our small cities and the housing need. The Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Program, which was a new program, and we were really excited and remain excited about this program, and the Tier 2 housing. Unfortunately, one issue has been neither of those programs have been rolled out. The Tier 2 housing just opened up their RFP recently. The Greater Minnesota Housing Development Program or Infrastructure Program has not yet unveiled. And so one of our goals would have been that we'd like to see an application process, cities go through the program so we can kind of tweak what worked, what didn't work. We're not there yet, unfortunately, so we're going to have to wait. But I really want to thank Chair Howard and the committee and putting this bill forward because we've heard a lot of interest from our small cities that want programs like this. In a small community, if you get a development and it's going to be a multi-house development, the infrastructure, as the testifiers have said, can be a huge hurdle and can add to the cost. And one of the things that our small cities have is we don't have developers coming in and say, we're going to do 25 units. They'll come in and say, we're going to do two or three units. We're going to start at maybe four units, and then we might build it out. Well, the infrastructure, if you're looking at a long-term development that's going to be bigger, those infrastructure costs up front on those first two to four units can be devastating, and they can bear the weight of the whole what the infrastructure is going to need for everything else. So bills like this, programs like this will really help small cities kind of get over that hurdle and be able to not only develop housing sooner, but lay the groundwork for cheaper housing with regards to infrastructure down the road.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. With that, that concludes any our testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we will go into member questions. All right. Well, before you make some closing comments, Lead Howard, I'll just say thank you for carrying this bill. And again, I think this shows the collaboration that we can have between Greater Minnesota and Metro Minnesota by carrying this bill and working on it. Thank you to the testifiers that came forward today because they're highlighting a real concern. And I would be remiss if I didn't say something for my mayor that go Hibbing tonight in section finals for hockey. I had to say that or I'll be in trouble. So with that, Lead Howard, closing remarks on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Igoe, for your comments and for our bipartisan work on this bill and so much this year in housing. And I mainly want to thank our testifiers from across the state for, you know, painting the picture that's so clear about why this is needed. I'm in particular just wanted to call out Mr. Tomasoni's testimony in which sort of highlights how housing is sort of at the center of so much. If our communities don't have the housing that we need, you know, our families suffer, our schools suffer, our economy suffers. It's really all roads lead back to home. And so I appreciate the testifiers for making that point. And the bill before us, I think, can help us in our multi-effort this session to make a dent on this housing shortage across the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Lead Howard. With that, I'll re-renew my motion that House File 1143 be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, members, with that, we've reached the end of our agenda. We'll be meeting again next Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Be watching your emails. There'll be an agenda posted shortly. With that, seeing no further discussion, we are adjourned.